This is Average Advice. I'm Zar.
And I'm Tim. Average guys, average stories, average advice.
Welcome to season two, where new and exciting things are on the way.
Stay tuned and stay average.
Average. Do you think we overpromised?
Nah.
Welcome back to Average Advice, everyone. Good. How are you going, Tim?
Fucking sun's out in Sydney, finally. It's been shit weather for the last couple of days, and I'm not really excited.
Today, we've got on a special guest I know quite well. It is my dad, Gavin.
Finlay Senior.
Say hello, Dad.
Yeah.
And it's also his birthday, everyone. He's the big 59 today, so... Welcome, Dad. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Yeah, just a disclosure. I blackmailed Daryl into making me be...
That's fine. We needed more guests. So it's way better when people say, hey, can I come on the podcast? Rather than say, can you please come on the podcast?
So at the start of the week, I was putting in the date for work. I'm like, oh, it's the 23rd. Dad's birthday this week. And I'm like, what do you want for your birthday? He's like, I want to be a guest on your show.
Easy and cheap. Easy.
Done.
Yeah. You still with us,
Gav? Did I disappear there?
Yeah, a little bit, but you're still here.
So, yeah, look, thank you. I'm in the Daintree and my signal is a little bit dodgy, so hopefully this works okay.
We'll see how it goes.
Well, we can hear you. Your video is now frozen on my end, but we can still hear you.
Let's just pretend like everything's fine. Yeah. You know, it gives the good essence of average to the podcast.
Oh, boy.
You're still there. I can still see you.
I messed up.
No, it's gone. Yeah, I don't think he can hear us.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you now. I'm sorry about that. I thought I had this shit sorted out.
That's fine.
But anyway.
We're so used to this internet issues.
Oh, look, I'm up here. Here in the Daintree Rainforest remote area. It's about 2.5 hours drive north of Cairns. I've got myself one of Elon Musk's Starlink dishes to
That's hilarious. Connect to the net. That's hilarious.
I know.
I don't know if you listened to our episode a few weeks ago. We had some guys on from Margaret River. Yeah. And they had a similar problem. We had them on previously and we had about 25 minutes of recording and then their internet just cut out. And they got the Starlink recently and it worked really well.
It's pretty good.
But like, I love how it took about an hour and a half for them to get to that 25 minutes of recording. It was so hard.
Yeah, well, look, I hope it won't be too disruptive. But look, yeah, it's good. We have pretty limited 4G up here, and I've got two satellite connections, and we try and make it work. We're at the very northern end of where, like, Starlink will actually work up on Cape York. It's fabulous.
What made you move up there? You were just sick of the Canberra cold?
Pretty much. Like, I've been in Canberra for 25 years and Victoria, my partner.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, it was because of him. Like, I moved I moved down there early 92 and, there was a baby along not long after that and I got stuck there.
Right, Zar always tries to keep everyone in one spot. You should have seen when I tried to move away. Yeah. You're just fucking giving me the death eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my partner, Victoria, Vigilatus, and we came up here for a holiday and we'd been trying to buy around Canberra and it was just ridiculously expensive. And we were looking further and further out, like we were looking around Braidwood area, places like that, because we wanted a bit of land. We wanted some trees, you know, and it was just out of our price
range. When Googong came up, unfortunately, all those areas just skyrocketed when they made that Googong.
Yeah.
Because they were actually pretty cheap, like around Burra and stuff like that. They were actually pretty cheap. And then when Googong got created, it was like...
It went through the roof. And so we came up here for holiday and it was just beautiful. And then it's like, oh, actually, the land's actually pretty cheap. Like, you can get a block of land for about $100,000 or you could then.
Is that just the land or is that like a...
Just the land. Yeah, just the land.
And you have a massive property.
Which is a hectare, but we back on to, they have what they call buyback blocks here. So blocks that have been, a lot of this area where we are was actually cleared back in the 80s and then it's grown back. And they're adding bits of that back into the national park bit by bit. So technically we're adjoining national
park. That's great
though.
On two
sides, but it's amazing. And we can't see our neighbours. We can hear them. We've got... unfortunately, a noisy neighbor who likes to get on the power tools at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday.
Gavin, I live right next to King Street. I don't even know what quietness is anymore. Like if I had my window open, you'd just hear sirens every fucking 2 hours. It's a nightmare.
You went there by choice.
I'm pretty sure we've heard sirens. Yeah. Pretty sure we've heard sirens on the podcast in the background. Well,
I always seem to somehow move right next to a police station, but now I'm right next to a police station and a fire station. So it's every day, all the time.
At least you know if there's a crime, they'll be right.
Without no excuses.
It's where it's where the action is.
Yeah,
man.
It's true.
all the fun of Newtown.
Well, I got one more year until all my fun's gone, so I might as well take it up.
So, Dad, you wanted to come on and talk about your passion, which is music. And for all you guys that don't know, my dad has been... you've had various jobs over the years, public service. You're in the public service now, right? Still?
Yeah, gone back.
So you've had various jobs, public service, other private gigs and stuff like that. But you've always, music's always been on the side, whether it be your main job or whether it be a hobby.
Yeah.
You've just been doing it since you're a kid, right? I mean, granddad got you into it.
So, my dad, your granddad, was a professional musician. He's retired. He's 82, 83 this year now. And he started out in the army as a musician and then did a degree and became a music teacher. And mum also, grandma was also really keen on music. They kind of how they met, I think, was like church choir kind of stuff. Oh, she was church music, like choirs and stuff like that. So, singing and playing choir. So it was always there. My sister also, we both started learning when we were really little and got pushed really into it. But I took to it, you know. It was like I wanted to do it, and so I put in the work and practice, because, you know, we had to have practice every day. I had to get my mum to sign a little book saying I'd done.
Do you think you would have been as much into music had granddad not pushed you into it? Or do you think that was the main sort of driving factor?
I think so. And it's a really interesting question that I think that, like, musical aptitude and musical appreciation, I think it's something that people are born wired for. It's interesting. I've done a fair bit of looking into the literature, the research on this kind of stuff. And I think that I just loved playing music and loved listening to music. Yeah. My grandma used to play me music when she was pregnant, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think everyone has some sort of creative element in them. Most people do. A lot of people don't explore that creative element. Like me, for particular, was art and drawing. As a kid, I used to love that, and you were just passionate about that. I really wish that I went to music class and actually did all the theory and stuff, because I didn't even start getting into music until I started doing singing lessons, which was when I was like 18, 19. And then that was hard for me, because like they at that age, they assume you have some sort of background theory, and I didn't know anything. I didn't even know how to read music, so it was quite difficult.
Yeah. Well, look, you don't have to read, obviously, but it helps if you learn when you're young, certainly. And a lot of the early childhood music specialists, like the school, or why I put URL into Ainslie Primary, it was because they had this great music program.
602.
They had this great music program. So does Lynham.
Why didn't you go to Lynham then, Zah? Why did you choose to go to Campbell, which has a shit music program?
I don't really remember what the discussion was with Lynham Campbell. I think it might have been to do with which of my friends were going to Campbell. And also, Lynham was across Northbourne. And Northbourne was just like a bit of a hassle to cross that time in the morning. We were like, why not? And also, I think Dad, at the end of primary school, Dad lived like a 10-minute walk from Campbell High.
We had a friend who taught there who said, so big and rough and a bit impersonal and gangs and stuff.
What, from Lynham?
You know, I don't know. But at Lynham, she was a teacher there. Anyway, Campbell it was. And look, Campbell had a great music teacher. Yeah.
Crispy.
Steve Crispin.
He started in year eight, and that was Crispy my favorite was class for the entire high school. Yeah. Like, whenever band came along, everyone in the class was like, this isn't even class. Yeah. This is just fun from start to finish.
I like Crispin. Crispin and the drama teachers were always fun. And I think I like resonated with those guys because they treated you like just people. They talked to you like everyone else, which I think just the nature of what they were teaching allowed them to be chiller.
Yeah.
Sure. Because I feel like when you're teaching something like English or science and the kids aren't interested and that you can kind of, I feel like the teachers can kind of tell that the kids don't care and this is what they're passionate about, and it's hard to relate to people who don't care about your passion. But when you're doing something like music and the kids are really enjoying it and learning, and they're getting
the same as drama,
a big community, you know. And Crispy was like one of our mates, you know. He's one of our, I'm friends with him on Facebook. I'll comment on his post sometime. Yeah, and I'll be like, Crispy, yeah, what's going on? So
when I was in school, the we got to do special stuff if you were in the music program.
What kind of special stuff?
Oh, like, look, being involved in musicals and going around camps and band camp, hey. Like when I was in high school, and it was just like in year eight, the school was like a 8 to 12 high school, and they did musicals, and we got to go, the kids in the band got to go away with the year 12s. Advanced at music. I got to do all sorts of special stuff in high school, which made it even more rewarding. Like I wasn't, you know, particularly good at sport or anything like that. But, you know, you got to hang out with older kids and do cool stuff like go on camps and trips away and stuff like that. So it became really rewarding in school and kind of reinforced it all. So, you know, by the time I got to year 11, 12, I was doing music like five nights a week and, you know, getting to the stage where, you know, I was playing in competitions and winning prizes and that kind of stuff. And this is the point, you know, we're thinking about, oh, what am I going to do with my life? And my parents were going, oh, well, don't be a musician because because there's no money in it.
Basically. I mean, they're not wrong. It's pretty hard to make money.
Well, they weren't wrong. I mean, they sure to be a music teacher, which was not something that appealed to me. So I started out at uni doing economics and law. But at the same time, I also I auditioned for the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra. So I was playing tuba by now, so people know. I started on trumpet, then I moved to tuba because I was frustrated as a young player. Like I was always sitting on third trumpet, right? And a mate of mine was playing tuba, and he was a really cool guy. Really liked him, and I said, "Oh, well, he was playing tuba. I'll go and do that." All these opportunities started opening up. Anyway. Auditioned for the orchestra as a casual player on tuba, and the guy that had been playing in the orchestra for like 35 years retired the year I arrived to go to uni in Hobart, and the gig was mine basically. So I just dropped out of economics law and went over to music.
Were you just more natural at tuba? Like, was it just easier for you than trumpet?
I think so. I think if people do, it suits me because I'm tall, I'm big,
got good reach.
A good reach, and I think I probably wasn't destined to be a trumpet player.
I'm mixing up my instruments. Is tuba the big one, or is tuba the one that's trombone?
Tuba's
right?
Like
yeah,
it's that's like a big horn.
I'm thinking trombone. Got, sort of, so you're big tuba.
Yeah, big tuba. Yeah.
Tuba's the one you like hold, and it's like up here.
That's the one. Yeah, it's not the world's sexiest instrument, But playing in the orchestra, let me tell you, you know, and I played in the Australian Youth Orchestra and got to play in the Opera House and places like that. And it was magnificent fun.
Gavin's just dropping names up in here.
Yeah, oh, it's true. I got to the funniest one was in the Opera House when we were playing with the Australian Youth Orchestra, and we were having a break during rehearsals. And as people sometimes do, I stayed on stage while everyone else went off to lunch to practice a little bit. So I'm by myself on the stage of the Opera House. Tootling away, and I stop, and all of a sudden there's this round of applause from right at the very back, and there's this tour group.
Oh shit!
Has been sitting there listening to me playing for like about 10 minutes, which is really freaky, but
kind of pretty sure that's a scene out of a movie.
So look, so I did that, and then I guess being a musician gives you a mindset and a way of perceiving the world as well, because. You know, sound is fundamental to all of us. I mean, this is the great thing about music is that, almost everyone can enjoy it. Some people don't enjoy music, and like I said, it comes down to how they're wired. But
I feel like the people that don't enjoy music just haven't found music that's right for them. Because what I love about music is there's so many different genres. Like everyone has different tastes. Yeah. There's so many different sounds these days that.
I
read something yesterday where it was just like, at what point in your age do you sort of just get stuck in your own genre? Because everyone that I know that's like older, you know, they sort of stay in their own little sort of age where, you know, that type of music, and then they don't really like the new stuff.
Well, that's kind of like Shout out to Grandad Kev if he ever listens. But I feel like Grandad Kev, he's old fashioned. He's like jazz and kind of big brass band music is like, he's like, that's real music. And then everything else is like, I don't get that.
It's real.
And my sister's and mom's of the 80s.
I feel like dad. I feel like dad, though. I feel like you've always been quite good at appreciating modern music and you can listen to a lot of stuff and you've got a very wide collection of music.
Yeah, I look real true. Look, and you know, there's a lot of research that this is the thing about the way that music reacts on our bodies and things like that. So I was listening to this podcast the other day about how talking about how music, finally doing some quantitative research on how music benefits mental health. And what they found was that music has similar benefits on your body and your mental state and your emotional state to exercise. And what they found was that it was like not as powerful in terms of like, I guess you had to listen for twice as long to get the same sort of benefit. But the way that he explained it was that it activates the parasympathetic nervous system, like the fight or flight reflexes, and then it relaxes at the end of it and the autonomic reflexes clip in and you relax again. So basically by listening to music, we are stimulating ourselves and then relaxing. And now you add that into the powerful, you know, late adolescence, early adulthood hormone situation, and that stuff gets really, really imprinted on you. Another thing about music is that, you know, it uses every part of the brain. So the rhythmic side of it imprints on the limbic centers, which is where you store emotional memory.
We're getting a psychology lesson.
Sorry,
that's good. That's good.
Why when they play old music to old people like have dementia and stuff, music from their childhood, because it's down in the deep part of their brain. It
brings
not
up memories,
the frontal part of
or
the
feelings.
Brain. Yeah, it comes under deep emotional memories. So this is why people, when they reach, you know, adulthood, and that music that's there, it's imprinted with their social adulthood. It really imprints on them and their social group. But for someone like me and other people, we always, you know, have this curiosity bug and always on the quest for new music. So for me, the best thing that can happen is if I discover some new music, some new sound that really speaks to me that I haven't heard before, that's what I look for, you know. And so that's led.
I wonder if when we, you know, because we're saying like your granddad's he's got a narrow preference of what he likes, maybe because I think of what he was born in like late 30s and then like the music from like the 40s to kind of the 60s when you were born, I feel like that was like his prime time, that the music didn't change too much in that time. And then maybe Elvis and the Beatles started coming around, but when you started growing up, I feel like music was changing a lot from like the 70s, the 80s into the 90s. Like maybe that's why you've developed, and because you were appreciative and a student of music. Maybe,
and I suppose with us, because music nowadays, I mean, it does change, but it's always using the same sort of elements. You know, even all electronic music, even pop music now has electronic elements into it. Like you can't really get away from the electronica. You remember when electronica was its own genre? Now it's just everywhere.
Yeah. It's become everywhere. Yeah, look, there's another interesting point that is actually an interview I read with a musician who said that melody is timeless, but rhythms get stale. And I think that what happens now with music is that, you know, electronic music has all become about rhythmic variation. It's become about rhythmic textures and stuff like that. And someone comes up with a new beat, all of a sudden, hey, we've got a new genre. But there's so much different kind of music out there as well. It's different. Like back in the 60s and 70s, you know, there was these revolutionary groups that came through and captured everyone's attention. That's not going to happen anymore. That the revolution's happened. And now there's plenty of great music out there, but it's niche.
Yeah.
You know?
On that note, but like when you get to the niche stuff, like what I really, really enjoy doing is when, can you stop typing while I'm talking, Zariel? It's really distracting. When you get those niche ones and you sort of you find something that's underground, and then eventually you've been liking it for years, and then all of a sudden it's just mainstream and you're like, wait, what the hell, why are you coming on the radio now? This is so weird. I have one question for Gav. So when we had a couple of people on that were sort of comedians or artists or anything like that, We had someone that was really a connoisseur in movies. And the question that we had for him is when he watches movies, and he enjoys the story and enjoys that, but he also enjoys the technical aspects of when you're actually watching a movie because he understands them. Is that the same now when you listen to music? Being a musician, you can actually like listen to the thing and you'd be like, oh, that's a really cool technical bit.
For sure. And I get, you know, if it's music I really like, I will really get into the technical aspect of it. I mean, this is when I went to music school, we also learn about the technical stuff in a lot of detail, you know, classical music analysis and all this really arcane kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's also appreciate the technical and the experience at the same time and appreciating them together. I remember, you know, playing with a big symphony orchestra, with the youth orchestra, for example. We used to talk about the buzz. We talk about these moments where you knew that everyone in the orchestra was having the same feeling at the same moment. You know, it's a really powerful thing. And it's the same thing when you're on a dance floor at a festival or something like that, and you know. I mean, another thing about great thing about music is this sense of anticipation. So this is a thing. This is a frontal lobe thing. So you know, if you've heard a song before, you're waiting for that good bit to come again, and then once again, that's stimulating you, getting you excited. Or you're waiting for the drop, and you know, in music they make it, they telegraph the top. It's a digga 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 digga. It's a drop coming.
They build up to it.
Yeah, the drop coming. Here it is. Boom, and everyone goes crazy. You know, it's
it does. It builds on top of each other.
Yeah. But totally, you know, I'll sit there and listen to, like, particularly, you know, old Led Zeppelin records that I know every single note. And I made Zariel and Siren, when we used to go on long drives down to see my dad in Bairnsdale, I would play the complete Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah. we drove to Lorne for the Falls Festival. And I think it was a 9-hour drive. Yeah. And I think we listened to the entire discography of Led Zeppelin on the way there.
We did.
It was good, though. It was great.
You got to do it,
man. You know, talking about this makes me think of that. I don't know if you guys remember that quote from The Simpsons where like Lisa's listening
to Gums Murphy
or music or something. And then there's that guy next to her is like, this is terrible. She's like, you got to listen to the notes he's not playing.
Yeah.
He's like,
what does that even mean?
That at home. I could do that at home.
Yeah.
So Dad, so you obviously Led Zeppelin, do you think that is, you'd consider them one of your most favorite bands or bands that influenced, inspired you or like, what sort of genre, which bands, like tell us.
Oh, look,
tell the people.
All sorts. I mean, really, it's gone through phases. Led Zeppelin was the one that first, well, Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin was what I first got into in terms of rock and roll music.
Yeah.
When I moved to Tasmania with the family and met some new people, and they introduced me to this stuff, and this was the music from my, you know, year 10 through to year 12, when these bands were actually still around. Unfortunately, John Bonham died in 1980 from Led Zeppelin. So what you were saying, that was the music of my you know, late adolescence, early adulthood, and it was deeply imprinted in me. But it's also some of the best, most emotive, powerful rock and roll music that's ever been made. And, you know, it just stays with you. And everyone to these day, everyone goes, you know, that was some of the peak. But, and I still love that stuff. And we'll go back and listen to it from time to time. It certainly influenced me as a player because I play guitar and bass and other things in rock bands. I love that classic rock stuff. But, you know, like I said, always moving on. So then, you know, in the 80s, I got into all sorts of other things, more hardcore bands like Husker Du and that kind of stuff. Got, you know, thrash music bands and so, things like that. And then, you know, it went on. And then in the early 2000s, I started getting into electronic music. So started going to, going to clubs and things like that.
So what genres do you not particularly enjoy in particular that you're just like, not for me?
Psytrance.
We're not going to include high tech because I don't consider that music.
I'm not a big fan of drum and bass or dubstep. You know, I just don't really do it for me. Bits of it are great. You know, I psytrance also. Yeah. I like in small doses, but you know, I'm more interested these days in kind of more ambient electronica. And I make it myself on computers and iPads and things like that.
I think Chill Step.
And more.
Chill Step is underrated. Chill Step is underrated because there was this electronica band like Blackmill. Do you remember Blackmill's art? Dude, that is by far some of the nicest electronic music I've ever heard. Yeah. I'm the same. I'm not really a big fan of drum.
What I really like is, and I don't know if you've heard of a band called Kingfisher.
Canberra band. Is that Canberra?
They're an Australian.
Oh, I'm thinking Lost Capitan. Kingfisher. Yeah.
Oh, they're ska. They're not even electronic, but there's this band called Kingfisher, and I saw them play up at Earth Frequency a few years ago, and they play instruments. So it's all like manual band and stuff like that, but they integrated into electronica sort of sounding. So it's like they use real instruments, but they have that electronic sort of vibe to it. And I thought it was really cool that they were doing that, but instead of using it all on the computer, they actually made the sounds with keyboards and guitars and the drums.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool that bands are starting to do that.
Yeah, I love that stuff. And I was doing stuff like that and still am doing stuff like that. In Canberra, I had a band called Ample Sample.
It's a sick name.
Played around the place a bit. And up here I'm doing mainly these days, I'm doing music for a theatre company, and we do the same sort of thing. Like I do electronic sounds. I've got this cello player that I do stuff.
Do you have any time that you're doing nothing, Gavin? Yeah. You seem like you're doing everything all the time.
I'm one of these people. Like I do have to make myself relax sometimes. I just like to be doing things or reading things. I'm constantly like absorbing, or reading.
You've always been a pretty big reader. So I get you've read a lot of books, so you must have had a lot of downtime to read books.
No, it's really fast. That's all.
What were you? I think you were telling me about when you were living, maybe it was in Canada or something, and it was really snowy, so you couldn't go outside. So you read, the encyclopedia or the dictionary or something like that.
That kind of stuff. Yeah, when we were snowed
in, Eminem did that. Read the dictionary back to back.
What did you read the dictionary?
Was actually my granddad on grandma's side who read
the dictionary. Oh wow!
And we used to have these epic Scrabble.
Yeah, bet. Got to check if the dictionary's like. Oh, actually, you already know what's in there. Sorry.
Yeah.
Dude, if I read the dictionary, I'd literally find a word and be like, I'm going to remember that purely for Scrabble if I ever play.
Yeah.
I'll play like one game in the next 20 years.
Reading the dictionary would be so hard because it would just be so boring. Like, aardvark.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Some of those things. Like, I had, when I was a kid, I had a copy of the paperback copy of the Guinness Book of Records, right? And I read it from cover to cover. And tell me, nothing makes you more annoying than knowing all of these facts. Right, when you're a little kid,
especially before Google,
I was a smart arts. Yeah, totally. I was the repository of facts, and people did thought I was a bit of a smart aleck. So I just shut up and
play. People think I'm a smart aleck. Yeah. I just don't have the facts to back it up. Unfortunately, I just say things and act.
These days, you can just get it on your phone. I've been using an AI app on my phone, which is really good for asking complicated questions. Like, I want to. Well, what have I been asking you? But,
it's a ChatGPT.
Yeah, well, one of those. Yeah.
One of the subdivisions.
Yeah.
One of the various ones, like, asking it questions about electronics and, all sorts of complicated stuff. Not for just general.
The other weekend, I came home pretty drunk. And at the party, everyone was just asking ChatGPT like a bunch of random stuff. When I got home, I was having like this argument with ChatGPT on my computer. I'm like, I need to go to bed. This is too much.
Yeah,
I have definitely enjoyed growing up with you, showing me music and sort of, I guess, giving me appreciation of music, because I can remember countless times listening to a wide range of different kinds of music, whether it be because I went through a phase of like punk and then I went into like a sort of an emo rock and then I went into like a screamo, and then I found my way to electronic and I just was so blown away by how I could have such strong feelings about different aspects of music. Yeah. Like, when I was listening to screaming music, like hardcore and stuff, I really loved the heaviness and the darkness of it.
Yep.
But then when I started getting into things like ska, or I guess kind of a bit more reggae sounding, it was kind of like the easiness and the flowiness of it that I like it was crazy. It's like different stages of my life. I was really appreciative of different aspects of music, which is so cool.
When I was sort of in year 10, I loved music. I was like, I never listened to podcasts or anything. Now I'm 90% podcast and less music. But I was like, when I took my singing lessons, all my music was sort of changed because I wanted music that had good vocals that I could listen to. So it's cool when you start learning different aspects, you just enjoy different parts of the song.
Yeah, and there's so much good music out there, and this is the thing, you know, you'll never listen to all the good music that there is in the world, you know. I mean, I went through a stage where I discovered, you know, world music was a thing, you know. I mean, it's everywhere now, but it was actually in the when was it? It was in the early 90s, and I was in Adelaide for performing, and somebody gave me a ticket to the very first WOMAD festival, and that was an eye opener. Like, you know, we'd already had a fair bit of broad.
What's WOMAD? I've never heard of it.
Oh, there's a WOMAD. It's a World Music Festival, WOMAD Adelaide. Oh. It's a World Music Festival, and it's well worth going to. And you know, music from Africa, and I was already kind of into reggae. Was already a big thing in those days, but discovering African music and South American music, and you know, Eastern European and Asian music, you know, there's so much out there, and it's an endless, you know, voyage of discovery. But you know what you were saying about the emotions, it's like, you know, that kind of music, it teaches you how to feel that range of emotions in a I call it a controlled way. Like, you know, all of that stuff that we evolved, you know, as apes in the jungle to learn how to escape from saber-toothed tigers, you know, we as humans have crafted this into something that we can do for our enjoyment.
I just pictured some monkey running away from a tiger and just pulls out a guitar. Just like, don't eat me.
Don't eat me. We've crafted that. It's just a thing that we can enjoy. And it's become a communal thing. You know, I guess in a lot of ways it replaces religion in people's lives now. This idea of going and enjoying music as a group. So you're with a bunch of like-minded people listening to music that you all like, and you're having this communal, you know, transcendent experience.
And it's crazy how you can have like such in-depth conversations with people about music. I remember I went to a party a few months ago, just down the road, and there was a bloke there I'd never met. And Matt started talking to him, Moose.
Yep.
And they started talking about music.
Yeah.
And the guy started talking about what music he liked, and we realized that he was into the sort of similar stuff that we were into.
Yep.
And I think we talked to him for about 3 hours just about music.
Wow.
And it was just so great that like, and it can be so enjoyable to talk about something like that for so long.
Yeah.
And we didn't like need to talk about anything else. We were just relating on that level. And I think we all can relate on the emotions that kind of music.
What blows my mind is how many songs there are where there's so finite amount of notes. Like how do they change the notes so much to create different songs? And obviously with Ed Sheeran just had a lawsuit for this exact reason. He's just like, you can't own notes. You can't own like that rhythmic chord progression because...
No, it's a really tricky, one. So you're absolutely right. I mean, at least in Western music, you know, there are 12 notes. And you know, there's a sort of finite number of combinations of those notes, but it's the combination of those things. It's the, you know,
the timing and everything too.
The rhythmic pattern, the harmonic pattern, but also the, you know, the tone color, and that's almost infinite, you know, in terms of the actual sound.
What's tone color?
Well, the sound of the instrument. So you know the difference between a trumpet and a flute, for example, right? And with electronic music, you've got an almost infinite palette of sound that you can choose from to make the sound. So that part of it is almost infinite. And then you add on top of it, you know, the context in which you're listening to the music as well, because that becomes part of it too. So, you know, there's so many ways that you can shape sound. So that, you know, the 12 notes, and that's only Western music. So you listen to Indian music or Middle Eastern music, or whatever, they have different scales. They give different flavor, and you know that when you listen to it, you go, oh, that sounds like Indian music. It's actually a different scale. So there really is an infinite variety.
When I think of Indian music, I just think Bollywood. honestly.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, Bollywood's a bit, you know, is really
very cheesy. Lowry,
but let me tell you, you know, listen to Indian classical music like sitar and tabla drums.
Yeah.
Is really evocative, and I love it.
I'm just picturing like you're in like a hookah bar, and it's just like that like kind of music playing, and it's kind of like what's the word? It's kind of like mysterious and kind of like
it is
soothing at the same time.
It is mysterious.
What I love about music is, I think in some way, it's both an art and a science.
Yeah.
Because music theory, like I was learning that at school, and music theory is so deep. And it's not easy. Yeah, like if you've never learned, like trying to learn music and then you learn an instrument, you're like, oh yeah, I can play guitar and stuff. Yeah. And you've been just reading tabs online.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, I knew nothing about music theory and like note,
chord notes go together.
Note, yeah. Like
what
notes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then like what I was learning like about like filler notes. So you've got all the notes, but then some notes you put after another as like a filler to move to another note sort of thing. And like this is all theory and it's so...
Yeah, well, it's like a language, you know,
language.
But there are different languages. And then, you know, what you had in the 70s and 80s with the sort of the rise of hip hop and sampling is you had another type of language where instead of making music out of scales, you're making music out of bits of little snippets of recording, right? And you didn't need to be able to read music in order to be able to understand it, but you needed to have an innate sense of rhythm and an innate sense of pitch and harmony in order to be able to make music out of it. But you were making music with a different language, which is really interesting. But so learning theory can be really great for you if you want, particularly if you want to play different types of music, it'll help you there. But, you know, anybody, as you know, we know, can just pick up a guitar and start bashing out some punk music, you know. Yeah. And, you know, you know, because you got into a band in high school, That was an interesting experience.
And that was real. That was really fun. Yeah. Like, you know, with learning, we did some recording, gigs.
Yeah.
I think I grew my hair up.
You had such a mop in that.
You'd had a mop. You had a mop. You know, and so
I had a mop.
I sent him that photo of you with the guitar and your hair. You literally can't see your face. It's just all hair.
Yeah.
I think I had a mop for close to 10 years.
It was a good mop. So you know, like the fact that you don't know theory and the fact that you don't necessarily like play an instrument doesn't stop your enjoyment of music one little bit. Mm. But yeah, I think I personally think I can get different kinds of enjoyment, more subtle kinds of enjoyment out of music that are personal to me, and I can share them with other musicians of, you know, my kind of level of expertise, and we can sit there and talk about that shit. Like you were talking about your mate about this band you like, I can sit there and geek out with musicians about particular high tech points in music.
Oh, the way that he used that C sharp seventh chord at the right exact time, and it was so intense.
I really wish that
I
really wish that I came from a musical background. Like, there's not really anyone in my family that had any music. Like I just wanted to learn an instrument, but when I was a kid, I didn't, if that makes sense. So you kind of need someone to be like, hey, you should do this because later on you're going to want to know how to do it later.
I remember when I picked
up saxophone just because I really, really like saxophone, but it's also really, really hard to be good at saxophone. So I got rid of it really quickly because I was just terrible.
It's true. Like, it's easier to learn when you're a kid, but it doesn't stop you learning and having lessons when you're older. And having vocal lessons is really good because it helps you to hear the pitches in your head rather than relying on the mechanics of the instrument to produce.
Do you think there's a particular instrument that gets you, I guess, the best? Like, I wouldn't say the best, but is like probably the best for learning music? Because Raph's been playing piano. And he's weird, right? Yeah. He plays piano, but he doesn't listen to music.
Okay.
Like, and I'm sure it's weird to me because he's like, I don't really listen to music. He'll listen to music so that he can learn it on piano, but he doesn't like recreationally listen to music. Yeah. But Raph is 16. But now he can just like, if you play him a tune, he can just play it on piano from ear.
Yeah.
Is that perfect pitch?
Yeah, so...
to be able to replicate it like that for me?
I think. Well, it's not perfect, but he's pretty good at it. Like he can, he can hear it and be like, "Oh yeah, he'll know the codes."
I think pitch memory is certainly something that some people have better than others. It's like any kind of memory. You know, you'll find if you've got a song that you know really well, and someone heard, that song's in E. If you hum that song, you know, you can probably find an E and be pretty close to it. And you can you can actually train yourself to get better.
It's also knowing your instrument too, like knowing where on that keyboard or knowing where on the guitar that you can replicate that noise.
Yeah, and if I think about playing it, you know, think about playing guitar, an E chord on guitar, I can hear the pitch in my head because I'm just so used to it.
You've heard it so many times.
So, look, I mean, I don't think there's any... Certainly playing piano is really good. Learning piano as when you're young is a really good thing to be able to do. I regret not doing it more when I was a kid.
I got fat fingers. I can't play piano.
I'm not particularly good. I can play keyboard reasonably well, but I'll never be a good piano player.
Because like you got to learn both the treble and the bass at the same time, which I feel like a lot of instruments.
Unless you can pat your head and like pat your head and rub your stomach at the same time, it's really difficult.
And I really love playing drums, but I have trouble doing it past a certain point because of that left right separation thing.
And that again, like drummers would have a different. They would learn music in a different way from everyone.
They're
else
like on every second beat.
They're not learning. Well, they're not learning the notes and the melodies. They're learning it's sort of like how to divide the space and the rest and how to make it, how to drive it, I guess. Yeah. Whereas, it's different sort of style.
Usually, don't you start with the beat and then you add things on afterwards? Wouldn't the drummers be like the most important? I suppose you could start with a melody too.
There's different ways of constructing it, but if I'm just jamming by myself, I'll turn on a beat, off my iPad or my computer or something like that, because it's good to have that there. I don't need it to be there. Certainly when I'm writing music, on my guitar, for example, I'm thinking about the harmonies and the chords, and then I kind of like got the beat in my head. Drumming is a different thing and drummers are a different kind of people, not to denigrate them, but that you got to have the right kind of brain to be a really good
drummer. Really impresses me is when people can play guitar really, really well, but they're also singing really, really well at the same time. You're like, how does your brain work? Do you just have two different brains? I just don't understand, because there's so much going into that.
I think it's the same thing. It being able to have your separate between your right and your
left, right and left brain,
hand and right and left foot. I can't sing and play at the same time. I've tried.
I can sing badly and play badly at the same time.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
I'm a pro at playing and singing badly.
Yeah, I've gotten into trouble before in the band years ago when the singer was my girlfriend and we'd written these songs together, and I told her that I just couldn't remember any of the words because I don't think about words when I'm playing music. I'm in this kind of like non-verbal state.
Yeah, focusing.
They've done this also with like MRI scans on musicians and things like that, where people like if you're reading music, it's a really front brain thing. If you're improvising music, it's like
the feeling
part of your brain is lighting up. But I'm certainly nonverbal. I would sometimes struggle to even talk when I'm actually playing.
I suppose it comes down to knowing the song perfectly. Because I look at it as an analogy of like driving a car. Like I don't think about driving a car anymore. It just happens because I know how to do it. Muscle memory style.
Yeah.
So to get to the point where you can sing and play guitar at the same time, you'll have to know that whole song in guitar by pure muscle memory.
Yeah.
Well, I can sing and drive a car like a bloody
but again, champion. Not well.
it's true. And I still look at the fretboard a bit when I'm playing guitar, which is a bad habit that I didn't train myself out of when I was learning, and I should have. But you got to, as you say, it's muscle memory. You got to know exactly.
Makes me think of people like John Butler from John Butler Trio.
Yeah.
How he can play guitar, he's the singer, but then he also does like crazy solos all at the same time. Yeah. And it's just like those people.
Didn't he have a seven string guitar most of the time too?
He's got a 12 string guitar, dude.
Well, a 12 string is just doubling the 6 strings to make it louder or different kind of tone.
Yeah.
7 string, oh yeah, I've played a 7 string. I can't really get my head around
it. Yeah, it's just like an extra 2 notes. Doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah, kind of throws you off because you got this extra one. I had a 5 string bass, which you played for. You had a
slap in the bass.
Yes, that was good. And it, slap the bass,
it was a bit. It was a bit weird. It did never quite completely comfortable with it. But I got
to be honest.
Did you enjoy bass or did you prefer guitar?
I definitely enjoyed bass. I enjoyed both of them. Bass was for me because the band I played in, we played a lot of rock, like I guess punky, like I guess hard rock kind of stuff. I feel like the bass was always just kind of rhythm, like it was just kind of so it wasn't very exciting a lot of the time. But I also was in a bad headspace and didn't be proactive with learning like crazy cool bass lines, like Chili Peppers kind of stuff. I was never that proactive with it. So when I played guitar and I got to play a lot more fancy stuff, it definitely
That's why when I look at it, is I think like the best ones, the instrument to learn as a child is the ones where you can impress quickly, because those are the ones that you can hold on to hobbies, because you're like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. Like I just got rollerblades and I was just cruising around just before this podcast, and I learned how to do the, it's like a step turn where you turn but you keep moving, and I did that backwards like just then, and I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And it's just sort of, it gives you that momentum to keep going and developing better.
Yeah True. If you're not getting the reward because you technically can't handle,
or just doing scales over and over again,
not gonna persist after a while. Well, you've got to do the scales, you've got to be good. I mean, you know, I did people ask me like, how do you get so good? It's like practice. Like, you know, I had to do that when I was playing the tuba in order to get to where I was going and do a music degree. You had to do hours and hours and hours of scales, and it was painful and it was boring. Right.
That's how you develop the muscle memory.
It pays off. Yeah. Exactly. It's the muscle memory, and you can
go. So how many instruments can you play?
Really well, tuba, guitar, bass, are my good instruments.
What about trumpet? You can play trumpet.
You can play trumpet and trombone.
Trumpet is a bass. It's a special trumpet. It's a bass trumpet. It's not a normal trumpet. But yeah, that's kind of like that's kind of up in that bracket. And then trombone and keyboards and electronic stuff and percussion and drums. Kind of like my next level.
Have you tried sax?
I have tried sax, but sax is really incompatible with brass playing. You have to have a different embouchure, and some people can do it. They got to have chops of steel. I don't know. James Morrison can do it, but it just doesn't work.
Because you don't need a reed in trumpet, do you?
Buzzing your lips. You're just buzzing your lips.
Because that was the hardest part for me, was learning to put your mouth on it right with the embouchure, but then also get the reed in the right place and know what the hell that's for. It was really difficult. There's a lot more into it.
And we've got a lot of people like saxophone is not hard to play.
It just
sounds
sexy.
I mean, it's always hard to get good. Yeah, saxophone's great.
So I think for the last 10 minutes, we should do a bucket of mysteries.
Go from your bucket, because my bucket sucks. Baby, I've only got one in there at the moment.
Dad can give us some wise insights into some of these questions.
Yeah, okay.
Be funny. I really hope you do.
The bucket.
All right.
Well, what is your favorite instrument? Okay. Let's see what we got here.
The suspense.
All right.
Ooh, this should be interesting. You have to pick one superpower and why.
I know this.
One superpower.
Okay.
But you have to justify it.
I think whenever I think of this question, I always try to think of a power that will give me multiple abilities. So like, no, it's not. It's not.
That's cheating.
I've got one power, but with that one power, I can do multiple things. So it would be telekinesis, because then I can move things with my mind, but I can also fly around.
That's cheating.
Yeah, I can lift myself. It's not cheating. Yeah, cheating. Right? Just because you guys aren't like intuitive with your powers. All right, Zah, what about you?
Righto, mate. No, I want to hear from Dad first.
Look, so I used to, when I was young, I used to dream about being invisible. So I could go anywhere cool. I want and do stuff. But I also used to dream about flying all the time. I think I probably pick flying just because I can go
telekinesis, then. Mate. You can get flying in it.
Okay, I can double up then. Yeah.
See?
I'll do that, yeah.
I would have the power to have whatever power Tim had.
Well, to be fair, there is a power, like the power to absorb powers. That's a fucking OP power.
That's it.
No, I think I would love to have the power to just be able to know the right thing to do or say in any particular situation.
That's such an OP
power. I
think
that'd be really cool.
I reckon what would be really cool is instant translation. So no matter what, you'll know, you can speak to anyone. You'll know every language.
Well, they've got that.
I suppose with Google.
They've got earbuds that you can get.
I did see that.
Translate.
Yeah, I saw that. It's a thing. That's by Google, right?
It's a thing. I don't know if it's, maybe it's Google, but yeah, they're definitely out there and I would really love
to. Yeah, I would love to do that. I reckon it'd be
bold. As long as as long as whatever the person's saying to you translates it, it's amazing.
Well, as long as it's in real time, I think that's what they need to get, because because they had ones obviously at the UN and all that where they all use them, but I feel like people say things and then someone translates. Rather, you want it to be translating as they're saying it, so then you can keep the conversation going.
So your superpower is essentially you would be C-3PO.
You know what, man?
You could just like be everyone's translator and know what everyone's saying all the times. That'd be pretty cool.
What about you, Zara?
Can you speak another language, Dad? I don't know if you.
Sorry?
You can play like 8 instruments, but can you speak any other languages?
No. I was actually it was a pain. We lived in Canada when I was a kid in Quebec.
Well, speak some Canada.
Yeah, they speak French there, and I just got really pig-headed about it, and we actually did French. We went. My parents put us in an English-speaking school, which was probably in hindsight was a bad idea. We probably should have just stuck us in a French school and had to deal with it.
Trial by error.
I was really pig-headed. It was the only thing I've ever failed in my life was French. But my sister was good at it, and she learned.
You spent too much time playing instruments. Didn't have enough time to learn French.
I was just a smart ass, that's all, and I didn't want to learn. I just didn't want to do it, and I didn't... It was hard also because they were advanced and I was like, I wasn't used to not being top of the class.
For all the listeners out there, I just want to tell you how much of a pain it is to verse Dad any sort of like IQ or general knowledge game.
Probably.
Have you like probably trivia
equally as annoying as versing you in chess, so.
It was always a thing around at the Steele family gatherings because I never used to lose. I used to win at triv every single time, and your grandpapa and Patrick and that hated it
because I feel like they're quite good.
They're
as
really
well.
Good. But they're really good.
And then they'd be like, "Oh wow, who's this bloody?"
And it's usually
I told you that was a reading the Guinness Book of Records when I was a kid. I won every single game, and they hate.
If you're used to winning too, and then someone comes in and beats you, you'd be like, "Nah," because you're in a competitor comes out. Like if one of the people in the group like just kept beating you at chess, it would drive you fucking crazy. I know it would.
Yeah. Well, we used to watch his little brother.
Really?
Not anymore.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
No, I beat him now. Zaz, he doesn't play chess anymore.
Obsessive loser over the chess. Like,
we used to watch Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on TV. When we'd have dinner, and the person on the TV would be struggling. There'd be a question. They'd be like, "Oh, I don't know," and Dad would just be like, "Oh, it's D." And he'd get it right. He'd get it right every time. Yeah. And we're like, "Dad, go win $1 million. What are you
doing?"
Takes
effort. It's like
I never did.
Yeah, and it's not easy to get on the show.
Especially they want people that fail. So if you show them that you could do it, they'll probably like, "Yeah, let's not bring home on you." Like,
you pretend you're bad at the time, and then boom,
kill yourself. Zara, did you answer your superpower?
Oh no, I didn't. Oh shit, I literally forgot. I would love to be able to like. Not invisible, but like you could like walk
tangible.
Through things.
Intangible.
Like, tangible. Actually, being invincible would be pretty cool. Like nothing harms you.
Bulletproof.
You could just like I don't know. You could just like run into a wall and be like, didn't even feel it.
I think super speed is like, I think, an underrated power. Super speed, like, I mean, the Flash in DC Comics is crazy. He can do anything. Like in the middle of a fight, he could literally, if he doesn't know something, he'd just run to the library, learn how to do it, and then come back and do it. Like,
so I watched a science video. This guy explains like, you know, random science topics, and he was talking about the Flash and super speed, and how if you could actually run as fast as the Flash, then you'd probably die because the physics of going at that speed, the human body can't withstand. And it was all these things like, if like you wouldn't be able to see, if you were running at the speed that the Flash could run at, you wouldn't be able to see anything because nothing, but relative to your speed. Yeah. No, I'm just saying like
fast,
obviously I'm just saying, of course, like a fictional character.
Whoa, dude. But
like there'd be all these other factors that go into it that physically there'd have to be like 10 other things that he'd need to be able to accomplish to be able to run at that speed, but also function
properly. Yeah. Look, well, I love the cop out there. They just give him like a friction proof suit because that's just like easy to make.
Yeah. Well, look, being able to play music really well is a superpower, and I'm quite happy with it. Thanks.
I agree with that. That's a real life superpower.
Wait.
Yeah.
You can play music?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And grow some cool sideburns.
Funny.
Was there a time when you started to listen to like Led Zeppelin and stuff? Was Granddad like really judgmental?
Devil's music.
It used to happen. It was before that, really, because by that stage I was off with my mates. But we used to listen to Countdown on the weekend religiously, and he would have to put up with that. And I remember seeing the Sex Pistols for the first time on television.
Oh, God.
And he nearly busted blood vessels. It was like he went red in the face. He was furious, going, "That's not music."
Well, to be fair, I kind of agree with him.
I remember when I was growing up and I was listening to sort of like Disturbed or Slipknot or anything like that, and my mum would come in because I used to listen to it really loud, and she would come in and she's like, "Tim, are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine. What do you mean?" She's like, "This is some really dark music, Tim." And I'm like, "No, it's just a cool beat," and I'll just turn it up. I think she thought I was going through some stuff.
It's true. Well, and look, you know, for some people that it is a way of letting out that angst. I mean, certainly, you know, in terms of Slipknot themselves, you know, that's what they were emoting. Oh, yeah. But, you know, we're able to listen to that and feel those same emotions without actually necessarily experiencing that. And that's what art is all about, ultimately, any kind of art. You know, any kind of artist is conveying an internal state. It can be more than just emotion. It can be a sort of whole intellectual construct. And trying to get someone else to appreciate your mind.
Well, I always know that if I listen to a song that I haven't heard in years that I used to love, you know, when you listen to a song and you've actually forgot about it, and then you listen to it again, you're like, "Oh my God." And you realize how amazing that song was. And it always brings you back to memories from like fucking when you're 18 or 16.
Totally. And I feel like there's no better feeling, because I've only experienced it a few times, but sometimes I dream about it. It's like when you play an original song at a gig and everyone in the crowd's like going crazy because they love the song, and you're like, "Yeah, we're enjoying this together. You're digging this.
My brain, baby." Yeah.
And like when I played in a band in the early 90s in Canberra that was quite successful.
Cuckoo Fondue.
Or even before that was another band called Pea Harness.
Pea Harness.
We made three albums. Yeah. It actually stands for Prick Harness, but we became Pea Harness.
And you used to wear jumpsuits, hey?
Yeah. Honestly, it was like Flight of the Conchords, but like a decade before. It was crazy. Yeah. And we made three albums and we got played on Triple J.
That's cool.
And a song went to number three on the heavy metal chart, would you believe?
What happened?
But they moved away. They went to Melbourne.
Yeah. Went to the music scene.
And I had
I got stuck with Mr. Z over here. Czar.
With small
you ruined his dreams.
But let me tell you, you know,
you're welcome.
Playing in front of a rocking crowd, you know, in a pub when they are totally, I still get people come up to me now and go, "Oh, you guys were amazing." You know, that was a real big part of people's lives back then, and we had a really big following. And there's no better feeling, honestly, than having a crowd moshing out in front of you and just the that sense of communion.
When Max did his first set at Reload, he said at the end, because we all came, which was like 30 of our friends, plus there was also a bunch of randoms. And he said at the end, he's just like, that was probably the most like enthusiastic and euphoric feeling I've ever had when everyone was just rocking out to his music.
No, it's fantastic. That was Max.
Yeah, Max Parsons. Yeah, old Max Parsons.
Tall Max. Fantastic.
Yeah, eight foot tall Max. Gav was telling me, like, other Gav was telling me how you guys used to play in Cuckoo Fondue. You'd play like 4 hour gigs. That's a long time.
We did sometimes
back in the day.
We often really late at night, like at the Gypsy Bar in town, and we would just play for hours. And it was back at this cozy little venue, and we had a really strong following of people, and it's amazing experience. That was another one. Cuckoo Fondue was an amazing band of its time, of its
another
place,
sick name though. You're good at naming bands, Gavin.
Yeah. I didn't neither of those were mine, but yeah.
Cuckoo Fondue.
Yeah.
I'd like to tell everyone that I came up with the average advice for the podcast.
And look, he didn't tell me that he stole it from someone else, but it's fine. No, I'm joking.
I think you guys are doing it fantastic. I don't listen to it.
Thank you.
A whole That's heap, fine. Because it kind of felt a little bit stalky. And I didn't want to listen to too much in case she says
you're learning.
That's what my mom said.
Now.
Like my mom, my mom said she's like, I don't know how to download it. And I was like, Mom, you need to. She was going to the Facebook page, and I'm like, no, that's not where it is. And then I showed her, and then she texted me. She's like, I'm learning so much about you. I'm like, I don't know if that's a good thing.
Well, I was worried you were going to say something bad about me, so I didn't listen.
When you're not here, the ones that you don't listen to, we're like, fuck that Gavin guy.
That's good to hear.
But yeah, that's an hour. That's a wrap. It's been a great episode, and I didn't expect to get like the neurological brain chemistry side of things of music too. So that was really interesting. So if anyone's interested, hit up Gavin Finlay for some beautiful music.
Appreciate you spending your birthday with us, Gav.
Oh, yeah, happy birthday. It was fun. I've got to get in and drink some more beers and play some more guitar now. I bought myself a guitar, my dream
guitar. How many guitars do you own?
Dream guitar. only three now.
Do you still have the Gibson?
Yeah, I still have the Gibson, but this is a top-of-the-line Strat. Mm. I gave a guitar to you. You have my old Ibanez. How's that going?
I do.
He hocked it for rent money.
It's been collecting dust for a little bit, but I have played it variously over the years. It's just one of those things where playing the guitar is one of those things where like I'll forget about it for like a year and then I'll pick it up for like a month or two.
It's the same with me and drawing. Like I get into it really good and I'm like, oh man, I forgot how good this feels. And then you're like, oh, I haven't picked it up for ages again.
It's a good guitar though. I had to get it fixed because I broke the nut. Yeah, I was restringing it and I broke
too
the
tight.
Neck because I must have done it too
did that,
tight.
I did that with my old guitar, but I broke the neck instead of the nut. Yeah. The neck just snapped and I was like, oh, shit.
Luckily, the nut was quite a cheap fix.
Oh, well, it's a good little guitar. Enjoy. I'm glad you enjoy it.
All right. Anyway, I think we'll leave it there, guys. But thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for everyone joining us and we will see you guys next week. And stay average. Bye.
Stay average.
Bye.